What are you wearing? Hello.
Hello, welcome to the show, and thanks for taking the time to hit play. My name is Amy Stevland, and I'm a designer and illustrator who has had the good fortune to work in the entertainment industry for over 20 years. My career path stems from a deep appreciation of the music and pop culture I absorbed as a kid growing up in the 80s and 90s. So throughout the course of this series, I'm excited to spend this time learning more about some of the awesome people who have helped to create those memorable moments. It's possible you may even have a fond memory related to our guest and his work. One other thing to know about me, especially for this episode, is that I'm a huge Janet Jackson fan, and I have the unique distinction of creating the largest tribute of original Janet Jackson illustrations. Started as a teenager in 1995, the Janet Tunes was a passion project that has lasted over 25 years. Now, my guest is intimately connected to the Janet Jackson universe, and so you might notice that we use a bit of shorthand when it comes to discussing that topic. I don't think you need a lot of background knowledge on Janet to follow our conversation, but if you want to learn more, I highly recommend that you watch the recent Janet Jackson documentary produced by Lifetime TV, and that should hopefully fill in some gaps. But first, my conversation with Wayne Scott Lucas on This Is How It Starts. Welcome to my very special guest, Wayne Scott Lucas. Thank you so much for being here today. You already know I've been a big fan of your work for a long time with Janet Jackson, of course.
Thank you.
Your fashions are part of my portrait, so I'm super excited to be talking with you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, well, thank you again for being here, Wayne. Before we dig in, I want to brag about you a little bit.
I want to share
for the people who may not be familiar with your work, just a few highlights, a few of your greatest hits.
Yeah.
Now, Wayne has been in the fashion world for nearly 40 years as a celebrity fashion stylist, working with Janet Jackson, Tina Turner, Cindy Crawford, Christie Brinkley, Halle Berry, and Whitney Houston, just to name a few. His styling work can be found in countless fashion magazines, TV ad campaigns, and music videos, which is probably where I came to know of you.
Yeah.
Wayne has had his own successful fashion line on the Home Shopping Network. His iconic costume designs have been featured in the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Rock Style exhibit and have been auctioned for hundreds of thousands of dollars in the recent Janet Jackson auction. And finally, Wayne was the original co-host of TLC's What Not to Wear program, and quite frankly, the only co-host that we acknowledge in this house.
Thank you. Thank you. Same in my house. Hello.
So Wayne, as I've mentioned before on the show, when I started this project, I had been thinking a lot about the way influencer culture is growing so fast.
Yeah.
As a creator, it's been a bit mystifying to me, this obsession with collecting clicks and putting everything on display for the camera. Now, there's always been some level of styling and fashion,
yeah,
you know, when it comes to people in entertainment, you know, in front of the camera. But this emphasis on appearance seems to have taken on a whole new level in the era of internet influencers. So I'm curious, what's your take on what's happening and, you know, maybe how things have changed since you got started?
I mean, the most important thing is when we started, I started with Janet in 93. I started as a stylist probably in 89. I was doing Whitney Houston and Mariah Carey with my boss, Patty Wilson. What changed was back then, Design of a Decade, Mariah Carey's first album, Mariah Carey's first video, Whitney's second album. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have Facebook. We didn't have Instagram. We didn't have TikTok. We had nothing. So you could take a picture or a Polaroid and you could fax it to somebody, or you could mail it, but there was no way. We didn't even have email really back then where you could say there was a project coming. Everything was by phone. None of this mess that's going on right now was happening then. I don't mind it because the best part about me being my age, I'm 57, is that I learned it when it happened. So I'm on the cutting edge of all the social media stuff because I had to do that to stay on point so that Janet didn't wear anything that Christina wore or that, you know, Mariah wore. I always made Janet's stuff specific. I feel horrible that the new fan base, because they're so behind the scenes with all celebrities in the social media game, they think they know everything and they know nothing. Because celebrities are putting too much information out there, texting, typing with the publicist. But they're celebrities are more secretive now than they were when I worked with them in the very beginning 30 years ago. And these fans think they know more than they did 30 years ago, when a tidbit of information was very crucial to get because you couldn't get it as fast as you get it today. The problem with that for celebrities are the burnout and the failure to succeed and stay sustained is going to happen faster, because as celebrities are doing this really fast and the kids are sharing it, these kids sharing are onto something else already. So the Megan Thee Stallion and the this and the that and the next one and the next, too fast to the market, too fast to share information, too fast to become a star when you're not a star. And then these influencers that want to think that their opinion matters, it's going to be the demise of the music business and it's going to be the demise of celebrity. And I think people are catching on a little bit, because you watch Tiger King. Everybody talked about it. Who cares? Now they did a movie about it. Who cares? Like it's going too fast, and people are going to see, if you eat too fast, you get a stomach ache. If you take in too much information, you get a headache. You guys, you got to just breathe a little bit, look for quality, and stick with the quality.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think I feel like the same thing. It's like you put something out and 10 seconds later, it's old news. So it's consistently, you know, people are just killing themselves trying to churn out, you know, thing after thing after thing. And, you know, and if you don't, you don't exist. So it's very interesting.
One of the most exciting things about Janet's Vegas concert was that she went through this whole litany of old songs. And I'm telling you, the audience was on their feet dancing to every song they knew. And the magic is, when a celebrity does not do this immediate garbage, the truth of the matter is, Janet's consistent history, you've got these fans on Twitter saying, oh, who cares about her? Honey, when you play those songs from the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s at the concert, the audience is on their feet dancing. There is some magic in history. There is some magic in a career that has spanned decades. And these kids are flipping anything older than 20 years old as if it doesn't matter. And I watch these new stylists, and they style these celebrities. Lizzo, I cannot believe how they're dressing her. Easily you can make her look great in those clothes. But they think that their big idea never happened before, because nobody goes backward and checks the history. If you go back to the 50s and the 60s, you're going to see some of these big ideas, like when Beyonce did the Bob Fosse, the Frug dance, you know, with the boxers and everything. It's like, yeah, okay, we saw it in Sweet Charity. Did any of you kids go back to Sweet Charity and say, look what Beyonce created? No, go back to Fosse, go back and learn. Go back to Liza Minnelli, go back and learn. You're missing a lot by not going back.
Yeah, I totally get that. I feel like so much of what I do with my artwork is like I'm an interpreter or maybe like a curator.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily out there innovating or like building holograms or anything, but I just have a real reverence for those who came before and the shoulders we stand on in terms of the evolution of music and entertainment.
Yes.
I'm just not interested in chasing the next hot it person and putting something out for the sake of putting something out on social media. Sometimes months will go by before I see something that inspires me to create. So I tend to stick to the people whose artistry I love and, you know, celebrate them and give them their flowers when perhaps many have cast them off as being past their prime.
Absolutely.
You know, one thing, just kind of going back a little bit, one thing that you said that really struck me was that you said celebrities are more secretive now than ever before, even though they're putting out so much more content. What can you say more about that? What do you think?
Well, because I honestly feel that, like, even when I keep referencing Janet because we know her.
Yeah.
I feel that as much as you guys think that you're getting, not you, but public at large, that they're getting some great content every time someone posts a picture of her getting her makeup done, it's so controlled now, because back when I used to shoot in the photos that I have on Instagram and stuff, those are behind the scenes real photos, because I was allowed in those spaces and I was allowed as a friend to take pictures. What you're seeing now is desperately, desperately controlled content for social media. So if a hairdresser works with Janet the first day, they'll have to sign a letter that says that they won't post anything to social media. So maybe Preston, her friend, she'll allow to post two things, but the real behind the scenes stuff, you're never gonna see. And in the old days, those of us those of us who were friends, we were allowed to see everything. I mean, Kevin Aquan, he has a whole Polaroid book with a million zillion Polaroids that would blow your mind. But we were allowed to take pictures because we were the confidants. And what really changed is the confidants aren't the confidants anymore. And everybody wants to get a social media picture out there, but they're not real. They're all, these are more set up than the behind the scenes pictures ever were, because we just snap pictures. And nowadays these kids are, you know, setting up the perfect picture of Janet getting her makeup done and the perfect picture of Mariah. You see how Mariah sits in the pictures? She doesn't move. She can't move anymore.
Yeah. That's always been Mariah, though, really.
And she talks like this. And then he's
It sounds like things are way less organic now. And I think you touched on something important about how the industry has changed, where confidants are hard to come by when clout becomes this commodity now that boosts people's relevance on social media. So it's like everyone is always hustling, and we just can't have moments for the sake of moments. Mm-hmm. And we just can't be real for the sake of being real, because for a lot of people, it doesn't matter. If you can't put it on social media for everyone to see, it just doesn't matter.
No. And I've got, what did one guy say last week? You gray-haired old man. Because he didn't like what I said about one of the projects we did. And I said, well, that's actually not that. That's a Gautier top. And I made that top. And he said, you gray-haired old man, what the F do you think you're talking about? And I went, gray-haired old man. It's like I'm 57 years old. I've done this for 40 years. I'm still styling people that I don't tell anybody because we keep it private. But it's like you don't lose your grip on reality or style or fashion just because you age past 30. You know, these young stylists that come in that are 30 years old, and they put these girls in these overdone designers. And like I said, Lizzo's all in plastics sliding around the floor. And that's not the answer. We used to, everything Janet wore, I made from designer stuff, because I never wanted Janet to wear something that you could get off the rack. And that's what made all those clothes all these years so unique. You couldn't find it anywhere. You couldn't get it off the rack. And that was the magic. You know, that's how we did it. And back then it worked and people loved it. And it was different and unique. But like I said, there was no social media. So all these fans that go back and go, oh my God, these clothes were so great. They were great then too. But, you know, we created a piece of history. We didn't create a vinyl suit that's going to fall apart, other than that Busta Rhymes outfit that disintegrated.
Yeah, I never thought about the chemistry involved and how those materials eventually break down like that. That's crazy. You know, you were just talking about inspiration and influences from the past, and we'll get into this a bit more with some of my style icons in a bit, but I'm curious, from your point of view as a stylist, where do you draw some of your inspiration from?
I really, when I have a job, like if it's a music video or something, I get the treatment. I hear what they want to do. I listen to the song. Like, especially with Janet and Justin and people like that, when I did Justin's World Tour, I go to the rehearsals and I sit in the room and I don't talk. Sometimes they don't know I'm there, and I just watch them dance. And I see, like, oh God, Kelly needs a skirt that's going to spin here, and Justin needs his jacket to come off fast. And
right. You have to incorporate movement.
Yeah. And the clothes, that's why the whole Super Bowl wardrobe malfunction, the clothes have to stay together. I know what I'm doing. You know, I've dressed people that dance for years. So I watch that, and then I hear the music. And like, one thing that Justin did, I did his Justified World Tour in London, and the music sounded very like Mad Max Thunderdome at one point, and then something. I get little music references, and then I start to build costumes off of that, and I see what the celebrity thinks of it. I go way back also in fashion. I look for things that are in the past, and then I see how they can work nowadays. When I did Justin's tour in London, there was a lot of stuff going on with motocross. That's why I did those gray and black motocross jackets. And then I go out into the market and I start to see what's for sale in the stores. And I know that if something is in the store now, if it's in the store now, it's current now. But if I see it on a Paris runway, I can say, okay, this is on the runway today. This is not going to trickle down to America for 3 years. So middle America is not going to understand this couture piece for 3 years. So what I'll do is I'll either know when the video is coming out or the film, and I'll base it on, I guess it really is deep how we think about this stuff, because I want it to hit right when it's going to hit in America, or right when it's before, so that we always look like we're doing something first. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You know, I remember years ago having a conversation with Renee, and he had mentioned that Vibe magazine cover you did with the sweater and the nipple piercing through the sweater. Mm-hmm. And he had mentioned how you had seen something like this in Europe and how much further they are ahead in terms of fashion. Mm-hmm. And it was just one of those moments where it captured your eye and your imagination, and you were able to bring it to us at just the right time in America for it to be on the cutting edge.
Yeah.
And have this iconic magazine cover for Vibe. So yeah, that totally tracks with what he had mentioned way back then.
You know, Renee was a genius. And, you know, the documentary cut me out to as if I was dogging. I love him. I didn't love how the divorce happened. I didn't love how it ended. Renee is a genius. Renee was one of the best things that happened to Janet in her life when it came to creativity, when it came to building who Janet was going to become. He was meticulous in his vision of who Janet should be. He was scary to work with because you had to stay on his good side, but he was extremely talented, so it was fun to work with him.
But yeah, that's intense.
He's intense, but intense is what gets the magic to happen. You don't get magic to happen unless someone's a little tough. But that we had to pierce the bra, we had to pierce that. That's like a $1,900 Donna Karan. That was a bathrobe. It was a cashmere bathrobe that we had to. And Janet wanted to show her Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse having sex on her inner thigh, you know, tattoos. Right. So that's just a pair of underwear and a bathrobe and a bra and a great piercing that I brought that day. But it was like, how do we pierce it through the bra, through the nipple? And that was all, wasn't that all pre-Super Bowl?
No, that was Velvet Rope. So that was years before Super Bowl. Yeah.
1999. Yeah, that was at Albert. We shot that at Albert Watson's studio. I remember that night. It was a special night. Kevin Aucoin was mad at me and he stopped talking to me. So he wouldn't talk to me the whole night, but my parents came to visit and we shot that video at the studio. I mean, that cover at the studio. Big night.
That's incredible.
And it's historic.
To think that was a bathrobe, is that Vibe cover?
It was a high gauge, very fine, very expensive. It wasn't 19, it was like 3,900. It was a very fine gauge, hand woven cashmere bathrobe by Donna Karan.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Incredible.
Soft as to be, gorgeous as to be. I ruined it when I pierced it, but hello.
Well, you got the shot. The shot's incredible.
Hello.
Iconic. So, you know, and just as you were talking too, it made me think of the fans talk about this styling all the time. And that's, I think it's the 99 VMAs where Janet performed Doesn't Really Matter. She opened the show with Doesn't Really Matter. And I think I've asked you this in the past. That's such like a happy, fun bop. And you guys came out with this sort of like goth, like very, very different from, you know, the vibe of the song. Where did that come from? How did that come about?
Well, you want to know the truth? You want to know the true story about
whatever
that?
Whatever you want to tell me, I'm down.
The true story was Kurt and Bart had been styling Britney Spears, and she was just getting really popular back then, like really popular and crossing over. And I was working with Janet and we were building an outfit for Janet. And somehow we decided to go red, black, gray, and you know, all those colors, which if you watch my career with Janet, and you'll see Justin's tour was gray, white, and red. You'll see Janet was red, black, and gray. The Super Bowl was white, black, and red. Pay attention to all the,
because
I kept
there.
Doing it over and over
for
certain reasons. And the thing was, the last minute, I called my tailor and I said, you know, where's Janet's outfit? Because I built everything and we were building an outfit and he said, I quit. And this was Andy from Body Worship who did Busta Rhymes outfit. He did the Super Bowl outfit with me. I mean, we were close as could be. And he said, I quit. I'm working with Britney 2 days before the show. I said, you quit? He goes, yeah. I said, you can't quit. I said, what am I going to do? So I had to find a tailor. I found this guy, John Schneeman in New York, who's very talented. And we had to build something last minute. And we started to build. And I couldn't let Janet know that Andy had quit. So we had built that last minute. And then we made it all fringy and goth. And then Janet Tatum saw it and she loved it for the hair. So then she created this whole thing. And remember, it was going to, when I saw it open with that big fan spinning in all the darkness, that was Janet's choice to go dark with the set. So I just went along with it with the clothes, and people still think it's one of the most iconic outfits she's worn because it was so against the happiness of that song. Because how do you do that at MTV and make it be MTV was very edgy back then, and we had to beat out the bubbliness of Britney. So the last minute I went to Radio City, I think it was at, wasn't it? And I ran in and I had a fitting with her, and the tailor had made the top wrong. And Janet goes, "Lucas, I don't like it." Now, we had one day. So I had these giant scissors, like they were like a foot long. And I said, "Give me the scissors." And the tailor goes, "No, no, just tell me what you want." And I said, "Stop talking." I took the scissors and I just cut right across her chest, and the whole thing fell to the floor. I go, "We'll have it done by tonight." We walked out, and the tailor was going to quit on me the last minute, but that's why it goes under the chest, and then he sewed a new piece on. That was a nightmare, but we went against the tide because Janet didn't want it to be bouncy and lovey and happy, because the choreography, you know, the way that they were dressed all worked with that dark scenic thing, because the video was bubbly enough. You know what I mean? So how do you cross over from a bubbly video? And we knew the video was going to be this, so we thought, let's take it a little darker. And if you pay attention to the music, it kind of speeds up a little bit during the show. They made it a little darker, and that's why we did it. I mean, it was not so deep, as she just wanted it to be a little bit more macabre, and I agreed. So at that point, now you can see the video, and you can see that performance and get two different versions, and then Top of the Pops is a whole nother version. You know, what we always did was always kept changing it up so that everything Janet did was special. Every performance was special, because a song gets boring if you hear it over and over. I get bored if I have to dress her over and over as this bubbly pop star. So how are we going to change her up? So that's how it happens.
That is so cool to hear the story behind that. And I think, again, it helps me understand why I've always thought Janet's styles were so appealing, especially as someone who is as fashion challenged as I am. But I think you both have this real gift, this sense of when to go against the grain, when things are getting overblown or played out. Yes. You're like, let's go left and do something unexpected. And yet it's still always very Janet. And I think that's a really special part of your work together.
Yeah, thank you. We had a great simpatico. I'll give myself credit for the fact that I'm really good about body focus and body shape. And I know how to make things fit, and I know how to make things work on people's bodies. And I know how to fit clothes impeccably so you can still dance them and they make you look good. I don't think people, you know, Rob does Dolly Parton. Rob used to do Mariah in those glitter outfits. I don't necessarily think that was the direction to go with Janet, but I also think that he knows how to build bodies, because you know, Dolly Parton zips into like a bodysuit like RuPaul that gives her all these shapes. The same thing with Mariah. So
let me go back real quick, because you were just talking about some of these other artists, and they have, you know, their own distinct personalities. So they're going to each have their own vibe, right? Like Mariah's going to do her glam and glitter, and Dolly's going to do and her form-fitting bodysuits.
And Mariah's going to drink too much. Go ahead.
And I think you know this about me, but Janet has always really resonated with me because I'm a bit more of a tomboy, and she's always had that really great mix of the masculine and the feminine. And I'm curious about your preference, just in the sense of your own personal area of interest. Like, do you really love to glam it up for those big events? Are you more comfortable in that space? Or do you like to play more with like the day-to-day looks? Like, does one interest you more than the other, or does it all just fall under the same category of fashion for you?
Outside of, you know, what you see with my celebrities, my music celebrities, I do Christie Brinkley for 30 years. I do supermodels for my friend Cara Young, I've been doing for years. I mean, what I love is, I love to show women how to love the bodies as they are. Whatever size they are, I can make you feel great. I can, and if you want to be in a man's suit one day, I'll give you just the right amount of feminine to make it still be something that you can carry. If you want to be very masculine, I'll give you a pocket square that brings it back to lady just a little bit so that the trans crowd likes it, the straight crowd likes it. I think, I know the most important thing is, if you're a good stylist and if you're a good consultant on wardrobe and things, you respect all the levels of what people can be when they go out. And I have to know that when I'm dressing Christie Brinkley, I'm dressing her for you. I'm dressing her for the trans guy that wants to look like her. I'm dressing her for the trans girl. I'm dressing her for the straight crowd, the gay crowd, because celebrities want to cover all crowds. The minute that you start to do this blatant, I'm an S&M dominatrix, I'm going to go to an awards show, that's charming, but my mom doesn't want to see that. You know, my mom may be interested in your music if she saw you dressed in a, in an S&M outfit like Versace, that was appropriate. You were still looking like you were, you didn't have the whip and the chain, but you still had, you know, leather on and some metal stuff. So I like dressing people as they are and making the best version of themselves, no matter what they ask me to do. The glamorous stuff is fun. That's usually just a gown and great fit and great jewelry and great shoes. The hardest thing is the everyday getting someone ready for a press junket or getting someone ready to be themselves when they go out, to make them the best version of themselves. And the problem as a stylist is everybody in their head knows what they like and hate about themselves. So I have to get into their head right away. And I have to see when I put a pair of pants on and I see their face cringe, that's not the right pant. And like, you got it. I think the reason why kids fail as stylists nowadays are they don't pay attention to the cues. They just think it's about pulling pretty clothes and making someone look fabulous. I mean, I'm watching Law's work with Zendaya, and he's so lucky that she's very tall, very skinny, and beautiful. Same thing when he was doing Celine, because if they're not like that, it is a whole nother ball game trying to make people look great in these designer clothes. It just is.
Right, because they're only made for one type of body. So if you're not that, you're not a mannequin, then you're out of luck.
Everybody's body can't carry them. And, you know, I say when these stylists are working, they put everything on the people in the kitchen sink. It's like, you don't put people in runway clothes head to toe. Like when Brandon Maxwell was doing Gaga, he got it right a couple of times. This last stylist that did Gaga for that award show the other night with that stick-on bra, to put her breast in that black bra and then push the bra down and the breast, I mean, it just made zero sense. It made zero sense that she didn't say it. She's ready to be, she's already like an Oscar-nominated star, Oscar winner. It's like, what are you doing? Like that needed to be, every outfit needs to be a moment that's clear and clean. That was terrible.
Maybe that's where the disconnect is. I think what you said was so great about your approach. It's just like, I'm just trying to dress this person so they look great and feel comfortable so that they can go out there and do what they do and be their best. And, you know, perhaps some of these other folks, and I can't presume to know what's going on in their heads, but it seems like the entire mission is just to be as sensational and in your face as possible, to be shocking, to, you know, grab the camera and the attention so you can be relevant on social media for a whole 10 minutes until the next thing comes along.
And you know what? Nicole Kidman almost always looks amazing. She gets the game. She gets the game. She's dressing a celebrity to be a celebrity, to make an appearance, to go to an award show. She's not dressing a celebrity who's trying to grab attention. And for some reason, every award show, she grabs attention. Simple. Clean.
Yeah, I think some people are just really struggling with this notion of like, in order to really make it, I have to be front and center. I have to get attention at all times. But the internet is forever. And in trying to feed the machine of instant gratification, I wonder sometimes if people are really thinking about the long game, you know?
I keep my mouth shut. If you've noticed, I don't do any red carpet conversation anymore. But I just kind of sit there and I just go, who did you pay to do that? You know, like who got $5,000 tonight to dress you like that? You look like a fool. Not Janet, but most of the people that I see out there. It is sad.
Yeah. Well, I think you talked about this. I think I just answered my own question because you talked about doing Justin before. But I was going to say, do you do a lot of red carpet, a lot of appearance stuff, but in music video, do you also do tour?
I did Tina Turner for 16 years. I traveled the world with her on Wildest Dreams.
Right.
24/7 and the other tour. And then when you do the tour, I do all the videos during the tour. And then I only did some of Janet's Hawaii stuff. She always hired other people for the tour because as shady as I was back then, I was much too expensive for the tour. You couldn't afford for me to design the tour too.
And then to travel and all of that.
Looking back now, well, Tina paid the whole, God, for years, me and Tina worked together, but Justin, I did the Justified World Tour because Marty Kildeka, you know, brought me in and he was Seanette and Janet's dancer and friend. And he brought me into Justin. And that was when they said that Justin Timberlake's clothes were so good that tour that he was giving David Beckham a run for his money as the best dressed man in London. So we accomplished a great thing. But then Johnny Wright didn't want to pay for the clothes and that became a whole lawsuit. Hello. See how shady?
Wayne, let me shift gears here a little bit. As I said previously, you were the original co-host of What Not to Wear. Yeah. And that was a show that was helping the average person fix up their wardrobe a bit. So I thought you would be the perfect person to maybe help me with a bit of your styling expertise.
Yeah.
So I want to share some images with you so you can get a sense of my style icons and maybe get a sense of a little bit of who I am and maybe help me out here with my fashion game. So obviously we have Janet, who you've worked with for years and have created many of my favorite looks.
Uh-huh.
Then we've got Linda Carter as Diana Prince in the old Wonder Woman TV show from the 70s. I don't know why, but I just love a huge lapel and a nice wide leg polyester pant.
Yeah.
I think I was just maybe born too late to get in on this trend.
I love it, yeah.
Now, obviously this is a man, but Gene Kelly, I love his style. He's very athletic, and I love how things are tight where they need to be tight and loose and flowing where they need to, you know, move and breathe. And I just always love that combination.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Finally, this is Angie Harmon as Detective Jane Rizzoli from the TV show Rizzoli and Isles. Now, Wayne, I feel like my whole aesthetic really boils down to this kind of no-nonsense, SVU, Olivia Benson, Jane Rizzoli, lady cop vibes, yeah. Like all day, every day. Okay, you got it? Okay, so yeah, I just kind of wanted to give you a snapshot of, this is essentially who I am in my mind.
Yeah, but that's a great snapshot. The most amazing thing are the four people that you pick, the four looks you picked all go together in a very cohesive way. And I can tell you, if you take the three outfits on the right, not including Janet, those three characters can create one outfit, and then you can throw in the trendy necklaces Janet's wearing or the athletic top to make it your own and make it more personal. So the Angie Harmon suit jacket, I love a three-quarter length suit jacket that's a softer fabric with a slight shoulder pad where you can push up the sleeves to make it casual. Wear that with a high-waisted pant like Gene Kelly's wearing, even with a cuff. And all of a sudden, that longer jacket and that longer pant with a little bit of width makes you look taller. And then you can add that scarf around your neck under the lapel. You can even have a shirt that has a slightly larger lapel or an old tuxedo shirt, or you add an athletic shirt like Janet's wearing, and then that just takes it down to a younger vibe. But if you put all those pieces together, it will make a very fashion forward, very cool outfit for you and your body. And if you're going to buy something trendy like a 70s top with a big lapel, don't buy it in cheap fabric. Don't buy it in polyester. Don't buy it in low-end fabric. You want it in a high-end fabric so that it doesn't – you want to nod to the trend, but you don't want to be the trend, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, then it looks absolutely.
And then once you have on this wide leg pant, I always say a wide shoulder, a smaller waist, and then a wider on the bottom, very bottom, so you look like an X. Or a wide shoulder, a smaller waist, and straight down, so you dress like a Y. You don't want to look like an upside down, like an A. You don't want tiny shoulders, big middle, big legs, because then you've lost the battle. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
When you put the support on the top of your body, you bring all the focus up to your face. And then I said, slick back your hair like Julie Andrews and Victor Victoria. Give yourself like a real boy, girl, you know, look, and all of a sudden you've got it. And then add Janet Jackson's like a million silver chains and wear a V-neck. You don't have to show cleavage, but go a little bit low and show some skin. And all of a sudden you've made this dressy outfit into some lady femme really cool look, you know?
I love it. I love it. Wayne, I don't know if we got this before, but I will tell you, I have a heck of a time trying to find these pants. Do I get men's pants and get them tailored? Where do I need to look for these pants?
The thing is now, trend has become so affordable. You can get stuff like this at Macy's and Bloomingdale's. And right now, Macy's is having 60% off. So some of the pants are $20. I mean, it's like, come on. So you want to shop for sales and you want to shop for trends. If you go to Macy's, there's a really trendy area like the Aqua area and the other areas that are carrying these trendy things that aren't in expensive fabrics. I mean, the truth of the matter is, if you go to do it at a vintage store, you're going to look vintage unless you go to a tailor and have it all tailored and fitted. But I know that these higher waisted pants are out there. I know that the wide leg pant is popular right now. Your choices of what you love are great for you. You can wear them casual or dressy.
I love, okay. So I'm not as challenged as I thought. have. Not, I have aspirations. I just have to put it all together. Find the right pieces and put it all together.
Well, how you put it, how you chose your fashion heroes makes a lot of sense. They make a lot of sense.
Oh, good. Okay, great. Well, that's super helpful. I love that. I thank you for putting that together for me, because I've been feeling like I know there's a way.
Once you get a pair of those pants in denim and a pair of those pants in gabardine fabric, you'll have your base. Yes. And then once we have that, if you ever have to wear a skirt, you can do the same jacket, the same shirt with a long tube pencil skirt and maybe boots, even flat combat boots.
Oh, see, really now you're getting into. You can start...
we're getting into
uncharted territory.
And then you take. Well, then you take that same skirt. Say it's a tube skirt, like a long tube skirt, maybe to the bottom of the calf. Then you add a combat boot. Then all of a sudden, you take a t-shirt, you put it on, and you wear a short motorcycle jacket, and then you put a beautiful outfit together. That's butch, but still femme, and it's really nice.
Nice. I love it.
How you do it. You can do the same. You know, if you do a high-waisted pant, it's so great to do that and then put it with a cropped, you know, cropped denim jacket or a cropped leather jacket, like a little short cropped motorcycle jacket, like right at the waist, you know, with a high-waisted pant, and then it makes you feel thin in the middle, and then it just brings all the focus up to the top. I mean, I know how to do it. I wish I could get more people. I've done about 17 people this week, but it's like, I could dress everybody if they would listen. And if we buy the stuff inexpensive, it makes no sense, you know, not to get what you need, you know?
Well, I really appreciate you indulging me and helping me put all that together. I know you are a busy man, and I am so grateful to have had your expertise here today, to hear all these great stories, and to have had this time together.
I love you. If you need me, you call me.
All right.
Thank you again.
Talk soon.
Bye.
And that's celebrity stylist Wayne Scott Lucas. Thanks again for tuning in. If you'd like more information on Wayne, you can follow him at Instagram at Wayne Scott Lucas Style, which is WayneScottLucasStyle. Or you can follow him at Twitter at Lucas Style, which is LukaStyle. You can also find my website at amiebruckner.com. That's AimeeBruckner.com. And finally, to watch the Janet Jackson documentary, check your local cable listings or head over to mylifetime.com/shows/Janet. If you enjoyed that conversation, I hope you'll take a moment to rate and review, maybe share and subscribe so you don't miss out on the next episode of this limited series. Hope to see you next time on This Is How It Starts with Amy Stevlin.